But first, we have a live interview on the phone now. She is a native of Aina in North Clare. Roisin Garvey is the first woman and first Green elected to Clare County Council for North Clare. She is a senator now in the Oireachtas since May of 2020, and we're delighted to say that she joins us now on the programme to have a chat with us. Roisin, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. My grandfather came from East Clare. I have a strong affinity with the East.
Oh, fantastic.
I used to work over there as well in Mount Shannon.
Very good.
And the drive over from North Clare to East Clare, it's like two different counties with all the beautiful forests and mountains you have over there.
No, thank you very much for joining us. So, listen, before we get into the nitty-gritty stuff of politics, because we've a lot to talk about indeed, can I just ask you, first of all, very briefly, where did the interest in politics develop from for you?
Well, I kind of grew up hating it because my father was a politician, Fianna Fáil, and like the way I grew up hating the idea of being a teacher because my parents were both teachers.
Right.
But I did full circle on both. I ended up becoming a maths and physics teacher and a politician. So there you go. You know, you grow up and you mature past rejecting all your parents' ideas, and then you end up becoming very like them. I did see Dad being a very active community activist, and my mother as well. Like, she was involved in drama and the youth club. Dad was involved in Camogie and getting land to build the school and housing developments and all that. So when you grow up in a household like that, you always feel like you're a member of the community and that you have part responsibility, you know, that we're all part of the state. It's not just the government.
Yes.
And the people are the passive people sitting back watching. We're all active citizens, I suppose. And I ended up teaching that in secondary school as well, then, active citizenship. So I never felt disconnected or that I wasn't part of it, and it wasn't. We all have to play our part, I think, in being involved in what we want to see around us in our communities. So I never thought otherwise. And then it was just so strange to never see any women represent us.
Yes.
And very few, and like Mary Howard and Claire Colin Malloy and Anne Norton and Fairnessham and Donna, four great women and have done a lot of work, but they're still in a very small minority there now. And Anne Norton's not running again. We have a good woman running for us in Ennis, Bridget Ginnity, but it does make a difference. And I think, like, the men have no problem with it either. I don't think it's the men stopping us either, nearly. It's just because of the old patterns. It just wasn't something you'd think about as a woman. But then I think I'd done a lot of community activism and environmental activism. I just thought maybe I could get more done if I was a councillor. And the only way to find out is by running and becoming one. And, it was tough now in North Clare. Being a Green and being a woman were two different challenges to the six men I was running against would have had. But we did a good campaign. My father played a blinder. I got a lot of people involved that weren't normally, traditionally involved in politics as well. And a lot of young people got involved. And yeah, it was great. It's always nice to be successful. And it's a huge honour to be the first woman in North Clare. But I worked with a lot of schools, you know, and I thought it's really important for the young boys and girls to see that women,
yes,
can take on this role as well. I mean, we need to show the young people that women can do every role that they want, whether it's a carpenter or a politician or a CEO or whatever, you know.
For sure, for sure. So look, can we talk about the Ennis CBS school? It has managed to share €10,000 off its electricity bill, or sorry, shave €10,000 off its electricity bill since installing a solar system back in 2022. Can you give us a sense of what was involved in making this project possible? I remember listening to you on Clare FM there a couple of weeks ago, and it has been very positive, hasn't it?
Yeah, so like, they have really led the way, I suppose. I mean, currently the Green Party have got funding to put a 6-kilowatt system on every single school in the country,
mm-hmm,
which for smaller schools will make a huge dent into their bills. For bigger schools now, this is the biggest primary school in Clare, the CBS. They have a 90-kilowatt system, which is 15 times bigger. So that just puts it into perspective. They have over 600 pupils, and they were building a new school. I had worked with them on green flags and the energy thing, and Dara Glynn and myself, we really clicked that way with regards to buildings and schools and the necessity to show kids the solutions. Because when you go to schools, you talk about climate and fossil fuels, they're like, why aren't we putting solar panels on our roofs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which was one of the reasons, the first thing I did when I went into the Shannon was bring in the law to abolish the need for planning permission on roofs. Because, I mean, that's just ridiculous. You think about it now. So now we're putting 100 houses a day are getting solar panels on their roofs, and every school in Ireland is getting solar panels on their roofs. and the CBS, when building the school, invested and did it and have produced more energy than they needed from solar power last year. The clever system using batteries as well, and also selling back to the grid.
Fantastic. And you know, you've worked with young children in schools like NSCBS. You know, do you think the younger generation are how would I say, motivated and keen in becoming more sustainable? Do you think that they care a lot about protecting the environment?
I think they want it to be the norm for them. I don't think they want it to be a big challenge or a big deal to stand out. They don't want to be an environmental activist. They just want it to be part of their daily life.
Yes.
You know, teenagers like to just have, you know, take it easy, not be always shouting and roaring. They don't all necessarily want attention on themselves. They just want things to be done easily for them. Like myself and Eamon Ryan, Minister Ryan, went in and met the 50ers, about 180 of them, in the Coláiste the other day. And they were so attentive. It was amazing. I was so amazed at their ability to completely, like, they listened to everything we were saying. It was fascinating to watch how engaged they were. And it wasn't that we were, like, preaching about climate. We were telling them about the local link, the bus service. Like, 100 of them put up their hands straight away looking for the timetable when we told them they can get into town for 50 cents. They want to do these things. And they also want to be independent of their parents instead of being driven around all the time. And any teenager I've met now that I've told about the local link services that are available, they're using them. I had two girls, 4 years, come up to me from to Ina from Clarecastle on a local link, cost them 150. I had another student from Scariff coming into town. She'd always been driven into Ennis till she found out about the local link through me, and she uses the local link to go into Ennis with her mates now all the time.
But Roisin, you know, that's all good saying that, and I understand where you're coming from, and I have used the local link myself. But how can we entice people to use public transport more, particularly the local link, because it's not being utilised enough?
Well, it's gone up 700% in the last 3 years, so it is being utilised more than it ever has been before. And I think the thing for the challenge for us, I suppose, and including me myself, is that we're so used to having to use our cars to go everywhere that we have no habits or no behaviour around using public transport when it comes to locally. Now, I always get the train to Dublin, but I always go out of my house, get into the car, and I drive places. That's what we do in rural Ireland, because we've never had public transport really as such. Mm-hmm. And now I have a handful of occasions only driven to Ina and got the local link into Ennis Lyman or to Ennis. But I probably could do that more often. It's just, it's a habit, and it's very hard to break habits.
Yes.
So that is the challenge for us car owners. You can see young people and older people being delighted and using the bus service more. I do think there's a huge part to play for maybe NS people who are stuck in traffic with car congestion, that they are now switching to leaving the car at home and hopping on the bus to get to the other side of Ennis, into the industrial estate or to the Garth Road or whatever, you know. So you can see that being an enticement. But if we can very easily get into our car and drive from A to B very conveniently, that's a bigger challenge for people like you and me who've had that convenience. Now, petrol and diesel is definitely costing a lot more, so I know for sure it's cheaper for me to get the bus to Ennis and back than drive to Ennis and back. It's just about timing and convenience, you know. So, I mean, we always say every village, every hour, but we're a long way from that. But we definitely have like 3 times a day, 6 or 7 days a week in most places now, which is great. But I suppose that is the big challenge. It's a good question for all of us car drivers. How do we break that habit we have? And even for me, and, you know, I'm the one fighting for the buses everywhere.
Yes.
I haven't used it all the time. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. The frequency.
But I mean, maybe if we can get the people, you know, we don't all need to stop driving our cars forever either. I mean, I did the maths there on the carbon emissions, and with the climate action plan and the strategy there, reducing transport by 50%, looking at the rural car drivers, we need to reduce our driving by 20% by 2030. So let's say we drive 300 kilometres a week. We need to reduce that by 60 kilometres. So that puts it more into perspective. That means if I can 1/5 of the time carpool with somebody, drive and get the bus, I don't know, not go there, you know, that's a different challenge, and it's a more enticing challenge than going, oh my God, I shouldn't be using my car. They're telling me I can't be using my car. So it depends on how we look at it.
Yeah. Roisin, the local bus service has increased in frequency, as you say, I suppose, in the last couple of years, and hopefully it will more. But I wonder, do they link in with the other services? I'll just give you an instance now. A couple of months ago, I was in Dublin, and I took the train, which I don't normally do, got into Limerick, decided I'd take the bus out to Scariff, and the train was due into Limerick at, I think it was 17:42, but the bus for Scariff left at 17:40. Mm. So I thought I might make it. So I rushed off the train. She was in on time and everything else, and just got out in the, the station to see the back end of the Scariff bus going out the gate.
I know.
And a little bit of joined up thinking you should have. If there's a train coming in, the bus isn't, it should kind of match in with it more and more. But
It's a pity, because we had that Connecting Ireland piece there. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I would say in some ways, that was put together by through the local authorities feeding in their input.
Yeah.
And that was missed by a lot of local authorities.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I did put in a submission myself, but it wasn't used. And there's like 16 times a day when there's a train arriving into Ennis 5 minutes after a bus leaves. So that is a huge issue. But I met the CEO of the Irish Rail, Jim Mead. And he has promised me to set up a meeting with the head of Bus Éireann and to try and get that connected piece. And I've asked Eamon Ryan to coordinate it as well. He committed to that the other day again. It is a huge faux pas
if
they're not linked. And also we need to get a one-stop shop on our phone so you can have them all joined up as well. TFI have an app, but it's not great. Still not linking with the local links.
Yeah.
But like the local links are relatively new. I mean, because you actually have a late bus now from Ennis to Scariff.
Yes.
And to Milltown Malbay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Kilrush. Yeah. And I'm working on one now for North Clare. Hopefully in the coming months we'll have a nighttime service at the weekends as well. Because like for me, the last train out of Dublin is 6:30. The last bus out of Ennis is 6:30 in the evening, which coming down from Dublin is nonsensical. So I'm looking at one for 9:30 or 10:00. For all the North Clare residents, there is a nice local link there going West Clare and East Clare late at night, 9 or 10, if you get in late to Ennis. But yeah, look, we're only 3.5 years in government. We've spent more money in public transport than we've spent in 70 years. So it's not going to be perfect overnight, but I know better than anybody all of the problems we have to fix.
I know.
But we're getting there.
The other thing that we would say in our family, I suppose, about going to Dublin, driving to Limerick to get the train to Dublin, you know, if I faced towards Dublin, I'd be in Portlaoise at the same length of time, you know. And
I don't know. Limerick to Dublin is only 2 hours by train. You get to relax.
It takes nearly an hour to get from where we're living here in East Clare through the traffic to get into the station in Limerick.
Yeah.
And that's
depends on the time you go at. If there's no traffic and if you can't.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's a local link you can get into Limerick at that to suit a train. It all depends.
Yeah,
but I have to say, once you get into Limerick, you're sitting on a train relaxing for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot different to driving on the motorway.
It is.
I mean, I'm fine with driving. I drove across America.
Yeah.
But I have to say, for me, mentally, physically, sitting on a train for 2 hours is so much better for me than driving a car on the motorway and then battling with it in Dublin.
Yes.
And
yes.
If you book the train in advance, it's very cheap. And so it's half price. I keep meeting young people on the train now. I go up and down every week. And even the ones that have cars now are parking their cars and using the train. So that is a big shift.
Yeah. And Rosie,
we might not all be leaving our cars at home in the middle of nowhere in rural Ireland, but when you see young people who were always driving to college up to Galway or Limerick and are now parking the car at the station and jumping on the train like my own son does, that shows we're doing something right.
Yeah. And of course, Rosie, there's a number of us that have that FT card in our back pocket, you know. Even Darren knows what that is, I think. He's only a quarter mile edge. The free travel, you know, it costs nothing at all.
It's great, isn't it?
It is, actually. Yeah.
I'm bringing in 20, I started an active retired group, Young at Heart, we're called, in the parish.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I'd say, and they're all coming up on the train with me to Leinster House in a few weeks' time.
Good.
Fantastic.
Good.
If any group in Scariff ever wants to come up, they can contact me. I'd happily host them. But they're all going to get the train. We're going to get a bus into Limerick and the train up. I'll pick them up at Houston Station because I'll already be up there. And we'll jump on the 145 over to Leinster House, drops us at Kildare Street.
Yes, that goes direct from Houston Station,
doesn't
it?
Houston Station, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Free
yeah.
for them and 130 for everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Uh-huh. Very good.
And now that you've the Leap card, you see, so I asked Minister Ryan to roll the Leap card out all over Ireland so that people, you know, using local links and stuff could use the discount as well, because in cities you have Leap cards and it gives you 30% off.
Yes.
So fair play to him. He listens to me and he put them into every post office in Ireland, and now people are benefiting here in Clare with a 30% discount as well. We just, not everybody knows about it. There is definitely a PR piece there, but I like doing PR for good things, so I'm working on it.
Very good. Can I ask you, Roisin, about our emissions? And our emissions in Ireland as it stands is 53% higher than the EU 28 average of 8.2 2 tons, which, I mean, it's a big problem for a small country. It's quite huge, our emissions, and agriculture has been scrutinized for being the number one when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions in this country. What's the Green Party's stance on agriculture? How can the Green Party support farmers and protect their livelihoods from being at risk? Because our listeners here across East Clare would be very, very familiar. East Clare region, it's a big farming community.
Yeah, I mean, I meet Tom Lane and the East Clare farmers quite regularly. Sure, I live in a farm myself. Like, there's so much we have to do because, I mean, look at the state of the weather now. What is going to happen with the state of farming? And I suppose this was all foreshown to me 20 years ago. I had Professor John Sweeney down to a bunch of farmers in the West County telling them all about the weather and how it was going to change and this weather, the flooding increasing and stuff and the drought. But I do think that there's loads that we have to do. I mean, now we have the Acres scheme, which is recognising results-based payments for farmers doing their best for nature. We have the TAM scheme, 60% grant for solar, which is massive for dairy farmers who've got big ESB bills, and they can generate income from selling it back to the grid. That's a big one. I mean, the domestic...
Yeah, and of course, most farms have, with any sort of...
only 2,100. The dairy farmer, we have 60% grant, so that's something as well.
Yeah, and most farmers
also
have
the
big...
The organics has gone huge there in Clare. We've gone from 60 to 240 farmers. That's a better source of income for them. I mean, there is no one trick, you know, because the one trick that everybody was following for years has failed them. This 10-10-20 and just keep, you know,
cheap fertilizer
out of the land and packing in the animals. And now there's lack of fodder. There's water pollution issues. The farmers are struggling, you know. So the model that they had hasn't worked for them. And they've been let down because they were led by this model. And that's on the government. That's on the Department of Ag. That's on Chagas, to be honest with you. They were let down this model of keep spreading loads and loads of 10-10-20 and getting grass. But now we're looking at mixed swards, which is better for holding onto soil. It reduces runoff. So there's lots of solutions. There is no just one. Yeah. And, you know, the Greens have been fighting tooth and nail in Europe to get more funding, to recognise this need to pay farmers. And also you see Grace O'Sullivan, our MEP, and me and others as well, campaigning against the Mercosur deal to protect our Irish beef. So that Brazilian deal must not go ahead, and it'd be great to hear other parties' MEPs shouting against it, like our Grace O'Sullivan is. It's madness.
Absolutely.
We're talking about sustainability, thinking about importing beef from Brazil when we have the best beef in the world here in Ireland.
But Roisin, can I just ask, you know, okay, of course we know agriculture does emit a lot of emissions, and we understand that completely. But at the same time, you know, as I said, you know, agriculture has been scrutinised for being the main contributor to greenhouse gas emissions in this country. But like a plane, millions of planes flying across the world.
Who is saying agriculture is the main problem? Well, I would say transport is and energy. Who's saying that agriculture is the main issue?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Millions of planes flying across the world, that does a lot more damage than farmers and their cattle.
Yeah, that's true. Did I say anything other than that?
No, you didn't. No. But in general, farmers and cows have been getting a reasonably bad press over the last couple of years, haven't they? That I don't think they deserve the
exactly,
press they've
yeah.
been getting.
I mean, the big farmers are. We can't be paying all farmers. You know, we have to say 1,000 head of cattle is going to do a lot of damage to the environment of which it's based. 30 head of cattle in a small farm in West Clare is not going to be the big problem here. But, I mean, people like to say, oh, the farmers are all bad and the Greens hate the farmers.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a very unintelligent debate. I mean, we have to differentiate between a small part-time farmer and a huge farmer with 1,000 head of cattle. And nobody wants to differentiate there. It's a nice, simple lowbrow. The Greens hate the farmers and the farmers are all bad. And, you know, every farmer's poor and all these big generalisations that are just not true, you know. A lot of farmers are doing quite well. So it's not all the poor farmer and the Greens are evil. You know, the Greens aren't evil. We're not all great, to be honest with you. But, you know, not all farmers are bad and not all farmers are good. And agriculture is part of it. So is transport. So is energy.
Yeah.
You know, but look at food production. We need more food production, not just meat and milk. We need more. We need more vegetables. And that's a big struggle at the moment because of the state of the land. People aren't going to be sowing their crops or anything. So, you know, it is a worrying time. And look, when climate changes like this and the weather changes at this level, everything changes, whether we like it or not. We were just the ones that were calling it out before because we knew it was happening because the science had told us for years. And we're kind of getting blamed now as if we invented climate change. But the fact of the matter is, the climate has changed and we all need to up our game and figure out how we're going to survive in this lovely country of ours and support our family and our kids and live in a good place with the challenges we face around flooding and severe weather conditions. I mean, I don't know how it's very... I mean, my neighbour came over the other day. We were giving him some silage and he was like, I don't know how I'm going to keep going. And I have a job outside of the farm as well. It is a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Not of the Greens making. Yeah. We're the ones that have been trying to warn and trying to look for funding for changing so farmers aren't stuck desperate for fodder or having too much one year and too little. Yes, it's all become so unpredictable.
Yeah.
And that's what climate change is about. It's the unpredictability of everything.
Roisin, we're a very small cog in a very big wheel, aren't we? You know, even if Ireland was to do everything perfect,
it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference.
It's not going to make a global difference.
Yeah. But that's irrelevant to what I'm talking about.
I know. We should do our bit.
How we're going to support our farmers in the face of climate change. I'm not talking about the Maldives or the Chinese or the Indians. And that debate is irrelevant now because climate change is here right now. We're feeling the effects of it. How are we going to mitigate against it? How are we going to support our farmers dealing with this tragic weather?
Yes.
How are we going to support our coastal communities that are losing land? That's the reality of what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how we're going to protect our country and our county. We are the third most vulnerable county in Ireland when it comes to climate change because of our long coastal areas and because our towns build some on floodplains and near rivers. So, like, I'm over the global thing. You know, think all politics is local. Think globally. Act locally. We need to make sure that every councillor, every TD, MEP is fighting for the money we're going to need to protect our land and protect our people with this, with what we're facing here with climate change.
Can we change slightly, Roisin, to electric cars and, I suppose, charging structure around the country? And I've been driving an electric car now for the last 3 years and very, very happy with it. And of course, the cheapest charging is at home with a nice rate of electricity. But the charging infrastructure west of the Shannon is not as good as it could be. You know, I go to Clifton 4 or 5 times a year now, and there was a time there was only one charger in Clifton, which was poor. But it's improving, but very, very slowly. There's a lot more could be done for charging infrastructure west of the Shannon. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, it's a nationwide problem, so we have to have a nationwide solution. And everybody thinks you should just finally put chargers in tomorrow, but. So basically, nothing happens that quickly in politics, and nothing happens that quickly when you're planning for a whole country. So we set up a zero emissions vehicle, ZEVI, a kind of a section of the Department of Transport who are looking just at electric charge points and dealing with an electric fleet in this country.
Yes.
And that was set up 2 years ago. They have commissioned every council in Ireland to come up with a local strategy around where they need their charge points because they know best.
Yes.
You would hope. Mm-hmm. As to where we need them strategically, you know. So I have made a submission into that we need one, we need them in every village, every town, every sports facility, every school. And that's been done in a collective basis. So there's groups of counties, Clare are in with Galway, Mayo, Sligo and Donegal. And Donegal are leading on that strategy. That has been inputted now into ZEVI. So we'll see the rollout. I know the first thing they're doing within the next few months is putting them in every 6 kilometres long motorways. But that's only for people who are driving on motorways.
Yeah, you mentioned ZEVI there. Will you explain what that is?
Zero Emissions Vehicle
Ireland or whatever is it, or
Institute
Initiative
or Ireland. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting my anagrams. Yeah.
But it's zero ZEVI. Emissions anyway.
Watch out for them, ZEVI or a new...
Yes.
Yeah. Sort of like the RSA, but it's ZEVI.
That's on the government.ie website, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, their gig is zero emissions vehicles, which is basically e-charge points.
Yes, yes.
And so there is a lot of work being done, and now it's time to get them put in.
Yes.
Again, you know, we've never invested anything in e-structure until the Greens went in and said, lads, we've got to switch our fleet to electric. Where's the infrastructure? So it's a big challenge. And every party wants funding for this, that and the other. And, like, you know, I'll defend us all the way. We've been saying that we needed this for years. I think now other parties are realising... Yeah, we do need this because they're buying the electric cars as well themselves.
Yes.
It's not just the Greens are buying e-cars. It's everybody's trying to switch. And they want the infrastructure. So the funding is there now. We just need to make sure that it's done in rural areas as well. Because, I mean, I actually brought it up at a meeting with ZEVI and the minister a couple of months ago. I was saying, you know, it's not all about everybody affording a new electric car. I want us to be able to create a second-hand e-car market by having infrastructure so that it is viable to buy a second-hand e-car that might only have a 200 or 300 range. as opposed to the new ones.
Yeah, there's good value out there at the moment in secondhand EVs, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I've three friends who are selling Nissan Leafs for, I don't know, 7,000 or 8,000 euros.
Yeah.
But the range is only 110 kilometers.
Yeah.
So you'd want not to have a lot going on for that to work for you living in rural Ireland. So the thing for me is, if we want to be able to make it affordable for people to buy e-cars, I don't think everybody should be buying a new e-car. I also hate the way that everybody's buying these big ones, because they take up a lot more space and they impair the safety of your driving as well, because they're higher up and it reduces your visibility. So there is talks about looking at a volume increase in the tax to bigger EVs, because for some reason people seem to be deciding they need to buy the biggest one there is. I mean, you can have a big battery in a small car. It doesn't equate to the battery or the range.
Yeah, well, we could have a big debate on that, I suppose. I know the Nissan Leaf, and they were the first of the electric vehicles, and they're, I think, the third generation of Leafs now, and they're quite good. And I know one of our colleagues here, Jim O'Brien, a good friend of mine here, was writing in the Farming Independent there recently about he's changing his batteries in the Leaf they have, you know? It'll double the range.
But the Nissan Leaf and the Renault Clio and all them are great. For some reason now, it seems to be trendy to get the biggest ones. Have you noticed that?
Well, I know what you're talking about, all right. But then, let's say, if you're living in the west of Ireland, as we're here in East Clare, you need a car that gets you to Dublin and, not necessarily back. I know what we do, we always, on the way to Dublin, you do need to stop for the cup of coffee.
To the ability to get you somewhere.
Yeah, you do need to stop for a cup of coffee. And you do need, while you're having the cup of coffee and maybe going to the restroom, as they say, that you can get a boost charge maybe for over that 30-minute period that'll get you back home again, you know?
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah.
But I don't think the volume, the size of a car equates to its ability to get you places, is what I'm saying. And I just think people should be careful of that, because, you know, it takes up a lot more space on the road and in parking. And I see people struggling to park their cars because they've got bigger. It's just something I noticed in Dublin now. I haven't seen it as much in Clare, but I've seen the size of the cars we're buying, of the e-cars people are buying, getting bigger, and it seems a bit unnecessary. And I mean, on a point of air pollution issue in urban areas, they do give off more parts per million, which is the big threat to lung disease and asthma in our urban areas, which is a huge issue in innocent places. So it's just, I just think people need to, don't think because it's a bigger car that it means you're going to be having a bigger range.
Roisin,
it'll just cost you more money.
Yeah.
No, Roisin, we won't keep you too much longer, because I know we've kept you long enough. So can I just ask you just about University Hospital Limerick? UHL's emergency department has been consistently and chronically overcrowded for years. The Nurses and Midwives organisation said recently that overcrowding records had been broken 3 times in the space of just 2 weeks at the hospital. And I couldn't believe it. It serves a population of 400,000. So in your opinion, What is the solution? How can the government help to alleviate pressure of staff at UHL?
Ooh, that's a six marker. There's so much to be done. There's no one solution. I mean, we have no Model 3 hospital. We're the only region without one.
Yeah.
Extending the opening hours of the primary healthcare unit, or the not the A&E facility, but the, you know, the new unit there in Ennis.
Yes.
Building our primary care facilities sooner. I'm pushing for one in East Clare and North Clare, as we were promised, so people can go over there instead of having to go to UHL. Bed capacity, they've only got one MRI scanner, which is insane. They need more of them, because you have people waiting in beds for your days for MRI scans. And the consultants now, they're hiring, and they're hiring 60 more. They will not be allowed to have private patients, so they're public only consultants. So, and that's something I've been fighting for since day one, because you know yourself, I mean, I've experienced myself, you go in and you're waiting for a consultant, but he's off meeting a few private patients, kind of on the double take.
Yes.
So now their HSE are hiring public consultants for public patients only, if you know what I mean. So that will make a difference as well. I mean, there's so many different issues. Then you've got the new beds coming on lower. They've opened new beds in Carcala. Like, I met the minister there, the head of the HSE, the CEO, and no sign of Click Cowan or anybody managing the hospital itself, ironically, on the day that he was down with the CEO of the HSE, which I thought was interesting, because I do think there's a huge management issue in UHL out of all the hospitals.
Yes.
So that is something that is hugely, and they seem to be avoiding that issue.
No, something needs to be done, that's for sure. Finally, Roisin, very last thing now. The Minister for Transport announced back in February an investment package worth €658 million to bring local and regional roads to required standards, with Clare receiving €43.5 million of this allocation. Quite a significant amount of money, to be honest. Do you think that this funding is enough to make our roads a safer place? You know, unfortunately, we've heard the tragic deaths of many of people on our roads in the last couple of months. It's shocking the way the figures are going. A lot more needs to be done besides this. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the road surface surfacing that's causing the accidents.
Yeah,
you'll never have enough money for roads in Clare. We've 7,000 kilometres of roads. I actually got the minister to meet Cyril Feeney and Alan Farrell, the CEO of the Director of Service of Transport, in the council office to make a plea to him to increase the road funding there. Just on Thursday, I arranged a meeting with them because we need more money for the roads, without a doubt. And actually, with all the rain and the climate change, which Cyril Feeney sought very well to Eamon Ryan, with increased rainfall comes increased damage to roads as well. So we were selling them on the green front as well. But the number one thing is speed is killing people. That's the number one thing.
Yes.
And driver distraction. So the driver distraction is up to the individuals 100%. With the speed, we're going to roll out the reduction in speed, but we need the policing on speed too. And it was good that Drew Harris said that every single guard now has to spend at least half an hour a day on traffic management.
There should be more though, shouldn't there?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, way more. But I mean, how much do we want to be policed, and how much do we want to put the, you know, we have to put the expectations on the drivers as well as the state.
Yeah.
It has to be both.
Yeah.
It can't just be the government's fault and the police's fault. You know, at the end of the day, it's the people driving the cars carelessly or at speed or on their phones are causing the accidents as well. And we have to have deterrence. But we need people to take responsibility. And like myself, I put my phone in the boot now because I'm, it's just so easy. When you're on your phone a lot outside of the car, you're tempted to be on it when you're in the car. So I put it in the boot.
Roisin,
we have to take personal responsibility, you know, as well. But we do need more policing. We need speed reduction. We need people to slow down. And it's terrible, because I've worked with traffic and I've been working for speed reduction. I said it again in the council the other day, the one-way system in North Clare for the bus tourism. You know, our roads aren't built for big buses meeting each other. East Clare, absolutely stunning place to go cycling and walking, but you wouldn't feel like you could do it safely with the speed on the roads. Hence the big push. I've been fighting tooth and nail to get funding for the greenways as well.
Yes.
And paying the farmers properly for that, because that's a big one, you know. We need to bring the farmers on board. There's now €20,000 upfront payment, and the more land they you let them access, the more money you get paid as well. So that's based on a policy I wrote, the Farmers First policy on greenways, about 5 years ago before we were ever in government. That's being implemented now when it comes to greenways. So we don't want to be CPOing land. We want everybody to work together on this stuff. So we have safe places to walk and cycle for our older people and younger people, so kids can enjoy the joy of cycling and walking independently like we did as kids.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Senator Roisin Garvey from the Green Party, we want to thank you so much for joining us on Scariff Bay Community Radio. It was a very interesting chat, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Oh, and secret news, I think I might have a woman running for us for the Greens in East Clare.
Oh, go on, you have to mention, yeah.
All will be relieved. As soon as I know, I'll let you know.
Oh, right, okay, very good.
I have her, I just have to make sure I can let you know.
Very good.
I know you were talking about no woman running in East Clare, and no woman representing East Clare.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And we have a plan, an amazing woman.
Fantastic.
East Clare will be very lucky to get her.
Fantastic. Roisin, thanks a million. Take care.
Mind yourself, son.
Bye.